What we're going to discuss today is the Jewish perspective on adoption. What does it mean? We're going to try to explore a little bit, seeing what the Torah has to say regarding this issue, adopting children, adopting older children. So before we actually start the shiur, the class, I would like to point out that right now, even in the Jewish circle, in the Jewish religious circles, the idea of adopting children becomes more and more known and more popular. But before we even start, we have to realize that it's a very, very sensitive subject. So, I'm only 20, 25, 26 years old. I've heard some stories, but my family never adopted. I would like to share with you the story, but it's obvious, and I've seen different statistics, and I think you already mentioned some people have adopted children. And I think in America, I saw one of the statistics that every 10th family in America either adopted or they're considering adoption. So it's becoming a very common topic in the world, but especially right now, it's impacting the Jewish community, the religious community, and but most of the rabbis, when they talk about a concept of adoption, they're trying to be very, very sensitive. So before even I consider to give the class about adoption, I wanted to hear some other rabbis what they have to say about it, and I asked one of my mentors, and he's a rabbi in New York. He's a pulpit rabbi. He's his own shul, his synagogue, and he's also involved in many different other communities. I think he studied psychology, so he's a very prominent person in the Jewish communities. So when I asked him first, I just wanted to share the idea that I'm considering giving a class about adoption. So, when I shared this idea with him, he had the biggest smile on his face. And I'm like, well, I didn't make a joke. Like, what was so funny about it? He's like, Gedalia, I want to share something with you. It happened to me recently. Within 4 weeks, two things happened to me, and I would like to share with you. And both have to do with adoption. So, I asked, of course, obviously, I told him, please share with me. So, he told me, you will never believe. But like 2 weeks, 4 weeks ago, on a Sunday, I received a call from a family who recently joined our community. They moved out of town. They came to New York. They've been living in the community for almost 2 years. And they give me a call, and they say that they would like to meet with me immediately. That something happened, they would like to discuss with me. So obviously, if it's an emergency, every single rabbi is going to find time and speak to his congregants, the people. So when this couple came to him, and I think they were in the early 30s, And they with the moment they came, he saw the frustration, and they asked what's going on. He's like, we're very disappointed with the community. And he was shocked, like, what's going on? Like, what's wrong about my community? He's like, please share me what happened. I want to know about it. So he said, we're very frustrated. We've been always considering and the adoption. We wanted always to adopt a child. And it's been a very, very difficult decision for us. And finally, me and my wife, we decided, yes, we want to proceed with it. We want to adopt a child. And it was a long process. It wasn't easy. But finally, we were able to adopt a child. I think it was a two-year-old daughter. And they were happy about it. That finally there was a child in the house, a child in the family. But he said, and we shared this news with the community. Every single person knew about it. But there was no reaction. Nobody responded. No one wished Mazel Tov. No one said anything. People did not acknowledge the fact that now we had a baby we had a child. And so that makes it very frustrating. That's very disappointing. For us, it's the biggest simcha we can imagine. There's a child in our house, but none of the people in the community acknowledged that. So he was shocked. So how can it be? So meaning, obviously, for them. And maybe they had a hard time having their own children. So, but finally, when they made the decision to have a child, for them there was the biggest simcha they could have imagined. But nobody acknowledged that. And the next Shabbos, when this rabbi was addressing his congregation, that was exactly what he was talking about. And he said he didn't mention the couple, but the idea of an adoption and how important it is for people. And for some people, it's like it's their own children, and they're going to be raising them from that moment on. So obviously, this was the first issue he was addressing in this community. But then he said, Gedalia, I want to tell you a different story. And this happened two weeks ago. So there was another couple who called me on Sunday and also requested immediately an appointment. So again, I see it's an emergency. So obviously, I have to discuss with them what's happening, what's going on. So this couple comes to me in my office, and they start complaining. And they say exactly the same thing. Rabbi, we're very disappointed with the community. It's like, something else? Another issue with the community? What's going on? So I said, Rabbi, we also adopted a child. And we also had a very hard time. And it was a very hard decision for us, for our family as a whole. But finally we decided, yes, we want to do that. And we want to adopt a child. And the moment we did, we wanted to keep it quiet. For us, it was just, it was a simcha, but we just wanted to keep it for us. We did not intend to share with anyone else. But he said that people were outrageous. People called us. People came to our house. People brought presents. People wished us mazel tov. People, they spread the news all over. And then for them, they seem like, and it's like, we feel that maybe it's fake. Because it's not really our child. Like, my wife was not pregnant for 9 months. And like they felt that they just wanted to keep it for themselves. They did not want to share it. But the community took a whole different approach from a different perspective and trying to make them, to be a part of the simcha, try to be a part of the joy, and this is what they want to avoid. This is exactly the opposite of what they were expecting. So he just shared with me, he said, before you even start the class, just acknowledge the people who are going to be sitting in the class that this is something very, very sensitive, and all people have a different approach to that. But the reason why I maybe decided to talk about it is I'd like to share with you. This is there was a book recently, I think in the last 5-6 years, was written by a rabbi. His name was Rabbi Schwarzbaum. Actually, I know him personally. Unfortunately, he died a couple of years ago. But he wrote a book about, I think it's more of a biography, and I just copied a passage from it. But the whole book about the story of how a couple who were Jewish, but they decided, they were both professors at university, and they decided that the moment that they didn't have children yet, so they decided they want to do something exotic. Actually, we want to have an experience in our life. So what they did, they signed a contract with one of the universities in China, to work as a professor, to teach at the university in China. I'm not sure exactly which city, but they both went on this journey. For 1 year, they spent in China. Excuse me. And what was happening, that one, then the story tells that once he was the father, Rabbi Schwarzbaum, who was not rabbi yet back then, he was taking a train to the university. And he was going from home, taking a train to university. And while he was sitting on the train, there were not that many people, and then realized he heard the baby crying. And it was 5 minutes, it was 10 minutes, 50 minutes, so he was realizing something's going on. And he was thinking, maybe there's something I can do, maybe there's something I can do to help. So he started going around and to see where this cry is coming from, until finally he went to the other side of the train, and he realized it was just somebody left the baby. The baby girl, on the train, on one of the seats, and it was left completely alone. So he realized something's going on. The baby was abandoned. It was a girl. Unfortunately, we know there's an idea in China, the policy of one child, and for some reason, when they realize that they can only have one child, so they prioritize a boy over a girl. It's an unfortunate, but that's what's happening there. So he was completely shocked, Mr. Avram Schwarzbaum. So he took the baby and immediately he called his wife and said, well, what can we do? So his wife obviously immediately consulted him and told that let's maybe bring the baby to a church or to somewhere that we know the baby can be safe. So they met each other and they went to a church to bring the baby there. And the moment they got there and they gave the baby and they told the story of what was happening, they felt a certain connection to this baby, and they realized that something, it's not just a coincidence that they saw the baby. So from that moment, they realized that they want to adopt this baby. And there was a reason behind why he was sitting on this specific train, and why he was the one to see it, to identify the baby. So they decided for themselves that they're going to adopt. And he said it was much easier to adopt, to be in China and to go through the whole process. He said, said that we were paid, I think he said in the book, like $250. That was the doctor, was our donation to the church, and they gave us the baby with all the documents. So when they came back to America, they were thinking the way they're going to raise the child. And they both were Jewish, so both acknowledged the idea that they want to raise their child as Jewish. So, but they realized it's a baby from China, so it's come from a different mentality, from a different background, from a different culture. So what should we do? So when they addressed the rabbi, who was an Orthodox rabbi, so he said, there is the concept of conversion, and you can convert the baby. So for them, it was the biggest joy. And they said, of course, if we're Jewish, we want to raise our child Jewish. And then from the story continues that they, from converting the baby and trying to give the baby the Jewish values, the Jewish identity, for them it was like their own journey. Then they started to realize and to identify themselves. So this took this person, Avram Schwarzband, to become a rabbi. And he ended up teaching in one of the yeshivot in schools in Israel. So I was personally very connected to him when I was myself learning in Israel. So, and he very inspired me, like a person just adopting a child from a different culture, a different background, who did not look like them themselves. So from that moment on, I thought to myself that if I have a chance to speak about it, so obviously I don't want to miss the opportunity. So that being said, what we're going to do right now, and obviously if you have questions, and I realize I have an accent, so if I say please, if I say something you don't understand, or if you have a hard time understanding me, please don't hesitate, don't get offended, insulted. I'd be more offended if you leave the class and we say, I have no idea what the rabbi was talking about.
Can you read one more passage?
Absolutely, a couple more. Here we go.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
So what I'd like to start first is like to take a look at the first source, and that's the idea of an adoption, but adoption more as a metaphor. So what's the metaphor? So we know there's a certain connection between the Jewish nation and God, and in many if you go through a lot of scriptures and a lot of writings within the Torah and the prophets and the other writings, many times our relationship with Hashem is going to be identified as God being our Father. Like we are considered to be God's child, God's firstborn. So it applies in many different sources and many different verses. So the question is, like, where would we get this idea from? If we know, right, there is a God and there's a Jewish nation, but why to identify this relationship as a father and son, or as a father and a child? So one of the sources tells that this idea of a nation or a king of the nation being a son of God occurs in many other nations within the Near Eastern, in places close to Israel, and many old ancient religions had exactly the same idea, that either them or their God, their main person, was identified as a son of God, and implying that he has a certain more power than other people. That being said, that obviously that's not what we're implying. We're not trying to identify ourselves really as a son, as a child of Hashem. Rather, that we know that in the times when Jews already came to the land of Israel, what one of their things they demanded from Prophet Shmuel, from Prophet Samuel, that the whole Jewish nation demanded that we want to be just like other nations. We still want to keep the relationship with Hashem. They don't understand us wrong. But we don't want to be different than anyone else. And why should we be different? We live in the same area. We live almost in the same location. Maybe we even speak the same language. So why should we be any different? So one of the commandments, one of the demands, they asked from Prophet Shmuel, that we want to have a king. And we want to have maybe certain laws or certain ideas just like any other nations. So that's sometimes when we try to track back the idea of having a God as our Father, so we cannot relate to it literally. Rather, it may be this is the first one of the first sources we find that the idea of adoption. That sometimes, as a matter of fact, we can see that our Jewish nation is a certain an adopted child of God, and this meaning certain this is the declaration of an adoption, and in a certain way a statement that Hashem, since He is now His authority, He is our Father, so He is the one who can discipline us, and He can tell us just like any other parent, He can tell to their child what's something which is right and something which is wrong. And this is very, very often happens in the relationship with a parent and a child, that sometimes parents know things better. And the parents want to educate, and the parents want to raise their children in a certain way, within certain values, and that's why, meaning that's the authority of a parent over the child. And this same idea, what the Torah is trying to tell us, that maybe we can apply as a metaphor, that this what mean this reflects the same way our relationship with Hashem, that we are the adoptive child of Hashem. It's just a very interesting idea, but this is already the early sources in the Torah bring this idea, that there's something, the idea of adoption is something very common, and it was not just it was something that appeared recently. This is, it's taking to the roots of the foundation of Judaism. But I just try to see some other sources. And the sources we can find in the Torah, and mostly we're going to be dealing right now in the sources in the Talmud. The first source is one of the tractates in Talmud that's called Megillah. And it's a source number 2. And the Rabbi Yochanan makes a very interesting statement. The Torah, the Talmud relates that Moshe Rabbeinu, who was the leader of the Jewish nation, he was the one who take us out of Egypt, he himself was raised by not his biological mother. Rather, he was raised by the Pharaoh's daughter, and the Talmud relates that Moshe actually had many other names. He had up to 7 names. The one name he was given by his mother. One name, which was actually Moses, was given by the Pharaoh's daughter, and many others. Meaning, certain people had a different relationship with Moshe, with Moses, and maybe certain names already identified the other character traits. But the Rabbi Yochanan is asking, if the verse states that she, whose name was Batya, the daughter of Pharaoh, the verse states that she gave birth to Moshe, and that's what meaning that's the verse we can find in scriptures, in writings, in the Torah. But the question, how is it possible? We know that that's not the case. We know that Yocheved was the mother of Moshe Rabbeinu. So why would the Torah, when describing the biological tree of Batya, the daughter of Pharaoh, why would it say that the daughter of Pharaoh gave birth to Moshe? We know that's not true. So why would the Torah lie to us? But Rabbi Yochanan says no. Maybe there's more to that. It's not talking about. Maybe it's talking about the real birth. But maybe there's more to that. And he says, the next thing he points out, but didn't she only raise Moses? She didn't give birth to Moshe Rabbeinu, she only raised him. Implying that maybe two different things. One thing can be giving birth, and another thing implying that just educating, raising a child. So it was a very nice thing of her to raise Moshe, but to identify her as his mother, it maybe it's taken a step too far. He says, no. That's exactly the reason why. And this is the reason why verse decides to call Batya, the mother of Moshe, is to say that anyone who raises an orphan, a boy or girl, in his house, the verse treats him as though this person gave birth to a child. So that's one of the earliest sources we find. And even according to Moshe Rabbeinu, we define as a hero, as a leader. Whenever we think of the leadership, that's meaning from the Jewish sources, Moshe is a man. Moshe is a person who we look up to. And from him we can learn many leadership skills. But he was a person who was raised by not by his biological mother. And then many rabbis ask the question, so if he had so many names, then why we call him Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe is not even a Hebrew name. It's indicating minamayim shatito, that I pulled him out of the water. But who pulled him out of the water? the Pharaoh's daughter. So the reason why we call Moshe Rabbeinu by the name which was given, but not by his biological mother, but the name the Pharaoh's daughter Batya gave to him. So the Moshe Rabbeinu is called by the name which was given by the person who raised him and who gave him everything he had. So even though he still had interaction with his own mother, and we'll know later on, there's a lot of sources which imply that no, he knew his own family and he had a connection to them, but yet Batya was the person with him who raised him, and he cherished as his own mother. That's very interesting source, and I wanted to share with you that we can think of adoption, maybe, yes, there's certain concepts, but to think that Moshe Rabbeinu, he was himself, he was an adopted child. And actually, the Talmud actually tries to find a source. How can we merit a person? What's the reward a person can get for adopting a child? And this is the source number three, which is a fascinating idea. It's trying to explain a very interesting verse. The verse says that happy are the people that keep justice and that do righteousness at all times. And in Hebrew, la sod tzedakah bechol et, that you read it that every single second in your life, the person is involved in righteousness. It seems like it's an interesting idea, and it sounds tremendous, but is it really possible to be always, every single second of your life, to be involved in righteousness, to be involved in acts of kindness? I'm not sure. Even the people who we look up to, like the righteous people, but even they sometimes they need a time to relax. They need to take a break. So sometimes we want to watch a game. And then we go to sleep, but we want to just be involved in something else. But how can you call a person, and who is the person who can be called that a person is involved constantly in acts of kindness? And the Gemara and the Talmud, the rabbis and the Talmud try to find an answer. Meaning the verse makes sense. But what is it talking about? I understand, I have to accept this pasuk. I have to accept this verse. But I also have to realize, I cannot take it for granted. I wanted to realize, to identify who is the person this verse is talking about. And the Talmud suggests two different options. This is the first option. And the Talmud is asking, is it actually possible, the idea of constantly being involved and righteousness at all times? So there were two different answers we're giving as a suggestion to try to identify the person we're talking about. And the first was given by the rabbis who lived in the city of Yavne. It says, no, it's talking about a person, a family, who maintains his sons and daughters while they're young. That we are enabling our children, the children are living in our house, they enjoy, they have a roof, they have a place to sleep, they have food to eat, but this is a very nice idea. But it's something obvious. Obviously, if we have children, that it's no one else's responsibility but ours to take care of them. We're responsible people. If we decide to have children, we have to realize it's not just about to give birth. It's actually, I don't think it ever ends to be a parent.
It doesn't.
See, my oldest is only 2 years old, and I and I can already relate to that. So most of the rabbis didn't like this idea because this is something very obvious, and that's, even though that can sound very nice, but maybe there is more to that. And the second suggestion was made by the rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, and he said no. It doesn't talk about your own children, because that's something normal, and that's something every person be aware. He says no. What it's actually talking about, the three refers to a person, to a family, who brings up an orphan boy or girl in his house and enables them to marry. It says that's what it's talking about. If people decide to take it upon themselves to adopt a child, not their own child, they don't have any relationship when adopting the child. But they take upon themselves this tremendous responsibility, and they proceeding with that, they're giving a child a place to live and food to eat, and providing them with education, and not just that, we're bringing you up until the marriage, until a person finds their bashert, and from that moment on, meaning we brought the child to the stage. And that's what Rabbi Nachmanides says, that's what we're talking about. The verse is talking about a parent who takes them on themselves to raise an adoptive child. That they take the responsibility to adopt them and to raise them as their own children and not to show them anything. Oh, we're doing you a favor. We're giving you this, we're doing this. No, we're treating you just like our own children. You're right with the rabbis, what you tell before. That's obviously, even though the own parents, biological parents, raising their children, it's a tremendous mitzvah. But I said, there's more to it. And that this is what the verse is talking about, if you adopt a child. And this is a very interesting idea. There's one of the rabbis who discusses the idea, what's the love is all about? What do you mean to love a person? So if you look in the Hebrew word of love, it's called ahava. Ahava is the Hebrew word for love. But it says, but it's not just a word. We have to look in this, what's the root of the source, what's of the word. So he says, there's in the word of ahava, there's another word inherited. In the two middle words, the letters, which is called haf. Ahava is not just to love. It says the word, which is we can find within the word of ahava, it's lahaf, and which it means to give. That's when you think, that's how you can identify the love. The more you give to another person, the more you feel a relationship to that person, the more you feel the connection to the other person, and that's what love is all about. Love is unconditional love. Love is unconditional stage to give as much as you can. And that's how you start connecting to this person, and it ends up, and we see in the source, that even though these are not your children, this is only children you adopted, but to give them more, to give them opportunity to have a life, This is the true definition of love, and it's something I just saw recently. There was an article somebody actually pointed out to me today. It was in the BBC News. Just keep one source for me. It was an incredible story happened in France. It was 20 years ago. There were two families in the hospital at the same time, and both of the mothers gave birth to two daughters. I'm not sure we're going to go through the whole article, but the idea is that after 10 years, when they finally realized, oh my God, my daughter doesn't look like me, like neither like me nor my husband. Sorry, one more. And the other family felt exactly the same way. They realized that even when they were still in the hospital, they felt that this is the child they were given is not their own child. But they did not have the guts to argue and to say, maybe it's not my child. So they took the child and went home. But only after 10 years they discovered the error. And they proceeded with a DNA test. And finally, after 10 years, they realized that the child they took in the hospital was not their own. And they started the whole process. The two families met each other, and they wanted to start the case in the court against the hospital for this horrible mistake they made. And unfortunately, finally, they were awarded, but they did not get that much money. But the reason I wanted to show you the article, that they realized this mistake when the children were 10 years old. And for 10 years, they were fighting against the hospital, or trying to find the reason why this horrible mistake was done. And only after 10 years, they finally were awarded, and they got the money from the hospital. But the end is the end of the story, that the both families met each other, and the children, two girls, met each other. But they both made an agreement. And they both agreed that they want to stay in the families they were raised. They did not want to find out anything about their biological parents. Maybe they wanted to meet them, but they said, we don't want to change anything. We want to keep the things just the way they are. So the reason I just want to point out this idea is I think that's exactly the indicator for this idea of raising a child. Even maybe it's not your own child, but when you treat the child just like your own, and you give them all the same rights and the same ability, as if your own child. you will not remember your life without having this child, a boy or a girl in your life. Sorry?
There's one thing, like, you can take another child and feel like they're your own and be okay with that, but then knowing that...
Right, so that's what that was bothering me the most.
Knowing that right. You can't... There has to be a pull to that as a parent, you know.
That was...
You wouldn't want to... Obviously, you couldn't give up the child you raised. You couldn't. But...
Right.
But there's no good...
Right, I'm still was bothered,
there's
but...
There's no amount of money, there's right. no whatever that could...
Well, it's almost like they were each adapted.
Right, but it's not just that they were adopted or whatever.
Right, so you can love that child and you can't give that child up, but in your head, as a parent, you know that you have another child.
Right.
Right. Still oh, right. That's true.
Still want to be in touch with that child. Mm-hmm.
Our child, right? Yeah. But this is your child, too, that you
right,
adopted.
Right. I would want them.
Right. To justify...
Yeah, exactly. I think I would want both.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You put in...
These families,
both moms
want
must
both.
Want both.
Read the end of this.
I know, but you just said they wanted to keep their own.
Well, because they, what do you do?
Right.
Well, they could all
be friendly and get together and get to know each other.
The same idea was going through my mind, but I was just trying to understand that to justify the mother's or the children's action, but just trying to keep the things the way they are because maybe just they were too afraid. Meaning, when I discussed with my wife, she said obviously I would like to find out because that could be my that was my.
That's your baby.
That's a baby. That's your real child, so to say. But at the same time, I think that the mother, meaning I'm. I can share this idea with you. I don't know how it feels like to be a mother, and you can teach me probably more. But for
I don't know what it's like to be a father.
I won't be good at this either. But the idea that the mother felt like she gave birth, and they raised this child just like her own. So even obviously this question can be always in the back of her mind. But for this, I assume for this woman was this is my child. This is the child I invested so much time, so much effort. So I don't want to change the things. I don't want to make it complicated. We live with this with our daughter for 20 years, and now to change things around, maybe we don't want it. We're happy where we are, and as long as the other child is also happy and we're happy, maybe there's no reason for us to change anything. It's an incredible story, and obviously there's no any questions. But for me, it was the indicator that they didn't care. That for them, this was our child. And then it wasn't adopted. It was a forced adoption in a certain sense. But for them, that did not matter. What's important was for them, this is our daughter. And nothing. We don't want to change anything about it. The source number four is more like the question, what it actually means to be a parent? And we can obviously find all different answers. But the Talmud and Sanhedrin gives three different ideas or three different characters in within the Torah and try to identify what was their function. So the first source we actually already seen in another Talmud, in Megillah, but it's again, the question is why does the verse state that Bitya was the one who gave birth to Moshe Rabbeinu? Because we do know that was Yocheved, she was his biological mother. But he says, and the answer is again similar, that the Batya was the one who raised him, and therefore he was called after her. And that's his meaning, the idea of raising a child. This is the first way to say, this is one of the things being a parent. You have to raise a child. And since she was one to raise him, she's called his mother. The second statement, however, is very different. That's the statement made by Rabbi Elazar, and he's talking about the verse, defining Joseph, who was only a son of Jacob, but the verse quotes him that Joseph was the one to give birth to all his brothers. That doesn't make any sense. Like, if you want to call Batya to be the mother of Moshe, I can agree on that. But to call your own brother like your father, that's for sure going a little bit a step too far. This is something that's very hard to understand, to comprehend. But then again, the rabbis try to find a conclusion and say, no, maybe there's an idea behind it. It's something with the verse trying to teach us, and what's the verse is teaching us is that you're right. Yaakov was the one to give birth to all his children. But who sustained them when they were in time of Egypt? There was Joseph. When he was one of the ministers in Egypt, and he was the one who providing and helping his father and his sons, brothers, to come to the new country and to adapt themselves and to have the sources, to have the financial help. He was the one who was helping them. And therefore the verse is calling him the father of the nation. Not because he biologically gave birth to his brothers, but for the fact that he was helping them financially. He was supporting them. So this is maybe the second part of what it means to be actually a parent. You're supporting your child. There's a lot of, especially in a Jewish education, in Jewish schools, there's how much people pay yearly for the children's education and university and many, many more. But we don't look at this. For us, it's important that we support our child. For us, it's important that our child gets the best education. And it doesn't matter how much money sometimes it takes. And this is sort of second part. We saw the raising and we were supporting. And the last verse within the same Talmud, Passage of Talmud, talks about the statement was made again by Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani and identifies a person. He who teaches the son or his neighbor the Torah describes him to be as if he begotten him. And the example that Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmani brings as a source, he says this is the relationship between Aaron and Moshe. We know Aaron and Moshe were two brothers, and Aaron had his children. But for a certain reason, the Torah identifies Moshe to be their father. But he was not his biological father. Aaron was the one. That was his nephews. That wasn't his real children. But again, the idea behind that, and in the last the source, the way it ends, it's talking about education. The one who educated the child is to be the one to be called a parent. Since Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was sitting down with his nephews and teaching them Torah and teaching them values, Jewish values, what it means to have a Jewish identity, he is the one to be called the father. So the Talmud in this passage raises three different aspects: to raise a child, to support a child, or to educate a child. And even though all those functions were not being preceded by the biological parents, but those who were in charge of it were called to be the real parents. And this is again pointing out this idea of adoption. It's not just adopting a child, and you're doing a favor. It's like no, this child becomes now like yours, and you putting so much effort into this child that there's no other way to see it. But this is your real son. This is your real daughter. Is if you are the one to give them so much to raise them and to support them and to educate them, then this is what Torah sees you as a parent. So not just biologically you just gave birth. Very nice. Doesn't take so much wisdom to become a parent. But what takes chokhmah is how to raise a child. And the last source we can see here is brought down by Maimonides, the famous Rambam who lived in the 14th century in Egypt, that he was the one to put a tremendous effort to just write a book which is called Mishnah Torah, where he brings down all the laws we can derive from the Talmud that he took it upon himself the responsibility to put all those laws in one book. And he brings a story about the famous rabbi whose name was Azai, who married a daughter of the famous Rabbi Akiva. And the Talmud relates to us that this Azai, perhaps he was a good husband, perhaps he was a good father, but he felt tremendous desire to learn. He saw himself more as an educator. And when it came to decide between what to do, to go into education, to become the rabbi in yeshiva, or to be the father and to be a husband, this was a very hard challenge, and it was a very hard decision for him. It wasn't easy. Usually, obviously, the best suggestion would be you can be both. You can be a father, you can be a husband, and you can also be a rabbi. That's if you see most of that. That's the path that most of the rabbis take in their life. But for him, he had a challenge. He only was able to do one. because he was so much, he wanted to. He had such a tremendous desire that he could not. He was not able to fulfill both. So interestingly, when he presented this question to the rabbis of his generations, they told him, and this is a very exception of the rule, but just to see, just to point out the idea is that actually told him, you can divorce your wife, and you can divorce, You still have to maintain relationship to your own children, but if it's a common agreement between you and your wife, then you should go and you should go and you educate other the other children, because the education, the reason why they came up with this conclusion, because the education in a certain way is meaning to raise the children. So the other, even though, and if I'm not mistaken, even he didn't even have the children within his marriage, but he, the way he saw himself as a father is because he was the educator. And he was the rabbi of the yeshiva who had many, many students. And the Talmud continues to talk about Azai, telling how many fine students came out of him, and to consider him one of the best educators, so to say, within the Jewish nation at the time. So just those were all the sources I wanted to point out with you, that the Torah has a very, very positive image when it comes to adoption. This is something we saw, that this, if adopting a child means to do righteousness at all times. So this is something very positive, and this is something to be seen within the Jewish world as a tremendous thing, as a tremendous action. If actually a parent takes it upon themselves to raise a strange child. But what I would like to finish and to discuss a little bit more in details is, from now we see the Torah has a very, we saw all the beautiful sources, what the rabbis talked about adoption. But we sometimes have to ask ourselves, so actually what motivates us, what pushes us to adopt a strange child? We see so many children, people around us, sometimes we do have connections and sometimes we don't. But when I see just a child in the street, so maybe it's a very cute child, but in that moment, I don't express and I don't develop a certain relationship to them, to the child. So sometimes the question becomes that what is really the motivation? Why would parents take upon themselves to adopt a child? So I would like to suggest, and we see that maybe there can be two perspectives how we can answer this question. What could be the main reason? So the first reason we can discuss together, but it seems to be the case of the reason, that one of the reasons could be seen as tikkun olam. What is tikkun olam? The translation of the word tikkun olam is repairing the world, making this world a better place. And this is our own responsibility. No one else can do it for us. So sometimes we have to take an action, our own action, to make sure that we contribute something to this world. That I can say that I did something, I tried to do something in this world to make it a better place. Just so we have a sense of being a leader, like we spoke about Moshe Rabbeinu, that he being the leader of the Jewish nation. But when Torah speaks about, describes Moshe Rabbeinu's skills of leadership, it says the reason how he became a leader, because he cared about the others. He saw, when even though he himself lived in the most comfortable house, being raised in the house of Pharaoh, being far removed from the slavery, but this did not prevent him from taking care of his own nation. Every time he walked out of the house and he saw the other Jewish people being enslaved and being treated like second citizens, or not even like human being, he felt the pain. And he felt like, maybe there's something I can do. He did not accept the situation. He tried to change it. So, and that's what it means sometimes to be a leader, and to do something, to change something in the world. So maybe that's what tikkun olam, that's what maybe sometimes motivates us. But this, we don't want to take things for granted, and we know how many people are suffering in this world. So if I can take something by myself and to ease it, and to make it easier, or to give a child a better place to live, then maybe it becomes my responsibility. That this is my contribution to this world. That something I did in order to make this world a better place. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I think when people adopt, I mean, I felt like adopting But when I was teaching on the west side of Chicago, there were so many kids that I just adored. But it's also just like when someone has a baby, there's virtual baby, it's the same feeling that you're going to get something from that child. You need, it's reciprocal. And it doesn't matter if you've given birth to that child or you adopt that child, that is when there's going to be a reciprocal relationship. And they give as much as you give, and you get something. You get something too. So it's not just repairing the world. I mean,
right.
Maybe at the beginning it's that way, but I don't think that's always, you know, the motivation.
Right. I hear that. Absolutely right. And I think that actually leads us to the second approach. Now you're absolutely right. So maybe sometimes, maybe that could be, that for some people, that could be the motivation. And maybe that eventually transforms to become, as I said, it's a two-way relationship between a parent and a child. And this is what leads brings us to the last source, that we have a certain commandment. One of the first commandments that Hashem gives to Adam and Chava, that we've seen there's a pasuk. It's wrote in Genesis that one of the first things after Hashem finished the whole creation of the world, the one of the first commandments He gives to the people is pru urvu, the idea of be fruitful and then multiply. That now Hashem gave it to us a present. It's our responsibility to have a continuation, to create the next generation who would appreciate it. So this one of the first commandments given to us in the Torah, this idea of pru urvu, that two people getting together, two people get married, and that meaning now they it's their meaning it's not the responsibility, but one of the commandments they have is to have children. And this is again emphasized in the Talmud, in the Yevamot, that it's the Mishnah, one of the sources in the Talmud states that person should not abstain from performance of the duty of the propagation of the race unless he already has children. So meaning this is again the emphasize the commandment, the mitzvah of having children. And there's a variety of different suggestions what it means to fulfill the commandment. And one of the opinions to follow is the idea to have male and a female, to have a son and a daughter. Once, meaning that you can have as many children as you want. It's up for the parents to decide. But sometimes the idea is to fulfill the commandment is to have two genders, to have a boy and a girl. Meaning that's how you emphasize you give life. Because just like it takes a man and a woman to give birth, so the same thing that you give those two options, you give birth.
You put that into the world.
Yeah.
Well, what if one brother has all girls and one brother has all boys? That's silly.
Then you can decide between each other. And maybe this sometimes, and we don't have to go into so many details, but maybe some people have. They want to have more children, and that's what they motivate. That's when they adopt. But sometimes it's also the we can see from the other perspective that unfortunately sometimes people have a hard time having children, and maybe for them having the frustration, I mean, sometimes the disappointment, wanting to give, continue to give, but they can't. So that sometimes is a solution people see. That's when an adoption comes in place. And we think maybe by adopting a child, that maybe that's how we fulfill the commandment. But the question is, when it comes to fulfilling the commandment, we have to know the essence, what it means. Like how exactly, sometimes when it comes to certain mitzvot, we have to know exactly how to fulfill them. Right? If it's, for example, if we have to light the candles before Friday night, so we know that's a certain time and before Shabbat, that's my obligation. So you have to know the details. So sometimes when we're discussing the details, how can I fulfill the commandment of pru urvu, then maybe what's the commandment is talking about, discussing, maybe it's talking, actually, no, it's a biological birth. That it takes a husband and a wife to actually give birth to a child. So maybe adoption, it would be a very nice thing to do. But it could be that you did a tremendous deed. But maybe it's just an act of kindness. But there was no way you can see it as a fulfillment of the commandment. And that's many, many rabbis were bothered by the idea. Can the concept of adoption mean that actually fulfilling the commandment of pru urvu, be fruitful, multiply? Or no, it's a chesed. It's a nice thing to do. It's a beautiful thing to do. We respect you for that. But this is it. So what I would like to do is to show One interesting idea brought by the rabbi, Rabbi Kluger, who lived in the 19th century, and he was bothered by exactly the same idea. Can adoption be seen as a fulfillment of the commandment? And he is himself right. He has a doubt, or he is challenged if we can go that far to take such a huge step and say adoption is the same way fulfilling of the commandment of pur vu. He says, I'm not sure about that. But what I'm going to do, I'm not just going to leave it by having a doubt. What I'm going to try to do, I'm going to try to explore and to come up with a conclusion. So, and actually, the source which he brings down is the source we've seen before on page number two, and this is source number two also. This is in the Talmud in the Megillah, because when it talks about Pharaoh's daughter raising Moshe, that her adopting Moshe Rabbeinu, that they say what the message you learn from there, that the verse states as if she gave birth to him. So he's bothered by this expression as if. What does it mean? If she raised him just like her own child, and they said the message we learn from there is as if she gave him birth. Does this expression as if can be taken literally, that she actually raised the child? Or no, it's just it's a nice comparison, but in no way you can say that adoption can fulfill the commandment. And he says it's not just something I'm bothered about. There's an earlier disputed in the rabbis when the Shulchan Aruch, the law codex of all the Jewish laws was written down by the famous rabbi Joseph Caro, who lived in the 15th century. He was born in Spain, and he ended up living in Israel, northern part of Israel, in Sfat. So he put all the laws together. So within when he brings down this idea of an adoption and he cited exactly the same words in the Talmud, that as if you were feeling as if you gave birth to this child, the rabbis are jumping on him and say, what are you talking about? What does it mean as if? And obviously there are two different sides the rabbis are representing. So one rabbi said, no, it's as if it's a comparison. It's just in comparing things. It's a beautiful thing to do, but it's not really fulfilling the commandment. But there's also the other side of the rabbi says, no, as if can be taken literally. And this is exactly the same we discussed, that by you raising the child, by you supporting the child, by you educating a child, this is the same thing as if you give birth to a child. And this rabbi, Rabbi Kluger, came himself to the conclusion that if in the case that people are having a hard time having children, and they come finally to deciding for themselves, probably was not the easiest thing for them to do, but when they come to the decision, we want to adopt and we want to invest in this child. So he says that if raising this child from his early age is you fulfilling the obligation. The same way if you would give a birth, because we said it's not such a hard task, but you taking upon yourself so much more, giving life to his strange child, that he comes to the conclusion that this is the fulfillment of the commandment. And this, fortunately, we're running a little bit out of time. But I just wanted to present this idea and adoption within the Jewish religion, that people are very sensitive, and it's just coming, because I think the whole idea of adoption was for a certain time was lost. Meaning within the Talmud we find many sources. Within the earlier stage in the medieval we find very many sources. But for a certain time it was completely lost. And I think now it's coming back. And now people have to take the approach of how we're going to be dealing with this. And I just hope that by showing all those sources, we can see that Torah has nothing against adoption, and it's even so much more. It's not just to give it, from a Torah perspective, it's not just giving birth to a child, but from Torah perspective, what's the definition of a parent is the one who's raising a child. And this is something I wanted to share with you today. Thank you very much. Any questions? I'm not sure how many if I'm able to answer all those questions. Unfortunately, I have to leave the whole discussion about adopting a Jewish child or non-Jewish child. But maybe there's always a next time.